It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd like to introduce you to people I respect and care about, but also if you hang out, if you have people that you care about and respect, but they're also like subject matter experts, you know, why not like hear from them? You know, I can tell you about my experiences in the Army. That's my experience. And when I was, you know, shooting in anger, it ended in 2005, 2006. So everything I know about the military has been as a spectator, someone from the outside. Well, let's get a person who, when they were active, were the top echelon of the world as a Green Beret Special Operations. And let's get someone who has been there, done that, and got the prize of the Medal of Honor for his actions in Afghanistan. And he's one of my favorite people. If you can help me out, Zach, with the hotline. Thank you. His name is Earl Plumlee. I call him Pistol Plumlee, and so does the Army. And by the time he dies, that will be his nickname. He is a guy who's done incredible things for God and country. We owe him all a debt. But he's also a subject matter expert in a lot of things that I've heard so many experts, Earl, talk about this, you know, counter-sniper thing. And this 100-yard... you know, shot. How do you explain the type of training that you would do, whether it's a stress fire, any of your training at 100 meters? What is the probability that after you stress your body, you could consecutively hit that target at that distance?
Thanks for including me in the experts. I haven't heard too many experts voice an opinion on it. But the probability of me making that shot that's not even a distance we train at. 100 meters is really just the bare minimum to say your rifle is even functional to train. So like that is the easiest shot. 100 meter shot with a rifle is incredibly easy. All my children can do it. So that's the metric.
I mean, it's to the point where doctrinally, before global war on terror kicked in, they considered close quarter combat to be 95 meters in, and right. You know, that's just on the outskirts of that shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's by all military doctrine, that's considered extremely close. That's a very close shot. The fact that he missed is astounding. And it also goes into the doctrine of we don't take headshots for the very reason that caused his miss is the muscles in the neck are very quick. People constantly are looking around, so that the headshot is really like only special circumstances would you attempt a headshot for the very reason that caused his miss. The former president slightly looked over. Just as the bullet was fired, and instead of an assassination, it became an attempt.
But the other thing, too, is that with a Cold War rifle, those rounds are, they're going to drift left. A person who's fired enough would know that. And then the other piece of it is that, we're thinking about, they're talking about the wind impacting. I mean, there's a 100-meter shot. What is 5-mile-an-hour wind doing to a 223 at 100 meters?
Almost nothing. Could you measure it? Yeah, there obviously at the micro level, there's going to be some drift. But for practically at 100 meters, even if it was 30-mile-an-hour winds, you wouldn't really be able to see it, or even hold with that type of optic he had.
And I'm so glad that you're here, though, because this is another question that I want to ask someone like you that's had, tens of thousands of hours firing bullets downrange and different ballistics, and the training obviously that a Green Beret gets far more advanced than what I was regular infantry. But the other thing is that you're training on other weapon platforms that we would even didn't even know exist, let alone handled, let alone use in a combat situation. So you have all this knowledge that you bring to the table. We talked about bump stocks during Las Vegas, and the Supreme Court made a decision on bump stocks. But without, you know, just understanding that shooting multiple rounds does not mean you're more accurate with multiple rounds. People talk about the semi-automatic feature of the AR platform and how dangerous that could be in a crowd, but for a specific single target, the last thing you would want to do is put multiple semi-automatic rounds at a single target. That really doesn't help you if you're going left of your target to begin with your first shot, right?
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at the breakdown of the rounds fired, you can see his first round, the one that he aimed, Alibet somewhat effectively, was, you know, hit the ear, but all the rounds that followed were further and further from the target, and that just shows his lack of competency with the weapon system, his inability to manage his recoil, and you know, he was shooting at a former president of the United States. Obviously, he was probably pretty nervous up until he was killed. So, you know, it's, if you haven't done stress inoculation training, it can be very difficult to pull a shot off like that. I mean, hunters call it buck fever. You know, lots of competent marksmen have gone into the woods, you know, see this big buck and get so nervous with the act that they'll miss these incredibly elementary shots. So,
and I think it's safe to say, go ahead.
But to your point, yeah, every round he fired after the first one was further and further from the target, and was really just up to chance where they went.
And so the other piece of this too is that, you know, if it's safe to say without, you know, you've got classified stuff out there too, but I would like to extrapolate that in your career as a professional soldier or Marine, you've never been given an order to wing the tip of an ear of a target, right? I mean, like, there's never a mission that a third party actor would take to say, let's scare the hell out of this guy, or let's wound him superficially.
No, and to, as easy as the shot was to make, a superficial ear wound from a rifle will, while possible theoretically, if you really wanted to thread the needle, that's not really probable, not really likely. The even if you had a person with enough training to make that shot, hitting a moving ear at any distance, even 50 meters, would be an anomaly, not something that would be reproducible. So no, I wouldn't let any sniper, and I've worked with the best in the world, shoot me in the ear for all the Team China.
right. So that's Earl Plumlee, Medal of Honor recipient and Green Beret, who is now out of the Army. But I want to say that, Earl, like, going to the other side of it, what I'm trying to point at is that it would be very unlikely that Iran or Russia or China or any adversary would hire this kid to do an act like that. And usually that kid is blamed for the death of the target and someone else made the shot and you blame the kid. Normally that's the way that works with a patsy. But I'm saying, so let's eliminate that conspiracy, but let's move to the Secret Service side. There's an investigation going on. We're going to find out much more information. I don't want to extrapolate at all, but I do want to say that I've been hearing there's an article in the New York Times and there's one now in the Wall Street Journal that says this shot was a one in a million shot because the guy who took the shot fired through an obstacle at 100 meters with a 15X scope. And I'm thinking, I don't know if that's a one in a million shot. I think that might be a one in 25.
I would say that is not even remotely the most difficult shot that particular sniper has ever taken. I worked with the CAT team. That's the counter assault team. That's the guys that were up on the roof, and that's the guys that showed up, you know, after the rounds were fired. That's the non-uniform or the uniform portion of the Secret Service, not the suits guys. That shot was extremely easy for him to make. He's the opposite, the antithesis of our assassin. That guy can shoot olives at that distance, standing, kneeling, sitting, prone, any wind condition. The fact that he made his shot is a not to my surprise at all. Like, that's exactly what he's supposed to be able to do.
And he also has a ballistic that's pretty forgiving, too. I mean, if I gave you a 9-inch...
Yeah, he's running a 300 Win Mag, which the distance between 0 and 100 for that round is almost nothing. So whether he was at 2 feet or 100 meters, that particular projectile, it's almost the same.
And by the way, that's Earl's argument of the ballistic and the platform that's being used. It's one of the things that has fueled previous... you know, conspiracy theories. One of the things a lot of people believe that, you know, Martin Luther King wasn't shot, you know, by the assassin that pled guilty to shooting Dr. King was the fact that he used a really high power rifle at a distance that doesn't dictate a high powered rifle. And so, you know, you're thinking to yourself, well, 100 meters with a pretty big, you know, scope. And that's, you know, and then the other piece of it, too, is that other people engaged it. So now the criticism comes in. You see a guy at the top of his head. You're hearing reports. Why not just take that shot? And the reason for that is, in your career, you've seen some suspicious things at high profile events. You know, you better be 1,000% sure that you're needed to take a shot like that during a political rally. I mean, my God, if you're wrong, that story is national news, right?
Oh, it's, I mean, especially, you know, I only guard the president outside the United States.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Still, if I see something suspicious and I pull the trigger and someone dies, you're legally liable. You have ended someone's life. And if you have to hem and haw over the metrics that caused you to do that, that's not a position you want to be in. And let alone in the United States, you know, the Secret Service has a protocol that they follow. I don't know it, but I'm going to guess that until... it was, you know, clearly defined and articulable that that guy was an assassin who was going to take a shot. They didn't have the legal justification to kill, you know, an American citizen. So people should like the fact that the Secret Service isn't just getting a funny feeling and dumping American citizens with a sniper rifle. I think that part, you know, it's a difficult situation when you have an easy shot to make, right, the head, but you couldn't identify a uniform or intent at 100 meters through glass. I think they made the right call by not just shooting somebody that looked weird.
And that's because the investigation, by the way, hasn't determined who was the first one to see the rifle, how was that reported, you know, what person gave permission. We're just saying from the, you know, if we're living in the world that sniper is looking at something, identifying something, and then sees a shot taken, they're engaging on the shot. They're not engaging on radio. That's the thing we're going to find out right in the investigation. So we're just taking the limited information we have. But I've just heard so many bad takes. I want to get Earl Plumlee's take, you know, his opinion on this. Here's the other thing. You know, you take this shot, and now the headline is Secret Service taking out Trump supporters. Now it's a conspiracy, yeah. You know, that you're randomly taking folks out. So, you know, in a world where you're working with a foreign government or other security people overseas, or, you know, you find yourself working with other jurisdictions, you know, to determine who's a bad guy and who's a good guy, you know, that might take some time. But what eliminates you from having to make a determination, is this one of ours or is this an adversary or a potential assassin, is, you know, usually a protocol and a radio network and some sort of TTP that says, you know, this is when we know, because you could easily have someone shoot a bunch of police and take over their position. Theoretically, you have to have some sort of standard protocol. What would have been right. The standard protocol if you identified someone on a rooftop and wanted to know if they were friendly or foe?
I think the protocol was correct. The time that it was taking for that to get their answers, that's the frustrating part. But yeah, if I see a person with a rifle on top of a roof, and I'm briefed, you know, the Secret Service was briefed that was going to be a friendly SWAT team was going to occupy that roof, and then they changed, they moved, and then maybe they have changed their mind again. But yeah, you get on the radio and you're like, hey, I have a question and we need to get it answered now. That question should have been answered in, you know, 45, 60 seconds. They should be like, hey, they don't have anybody on the roof. And then we start working our way toward the counter sniper fire, or we'll call the people in that building and get them up on that roof right now. That's the frustrating part. Action should have been taken almost immediately. I don't think the first 30 seconds that sniper team should have killed somebody. You know, hindsight's 20/20. Yes, now they should have. But operating with what they knew at the time, you know, that's, I'm glad that the Secret Service isn't just shooting every weird person they see as they travel the country. And I think a lot of people are forgetting, you know, if you look at the schedule, that Secret Service team is getting out 3 or 4 times a day in different venues, working with different agencies, that have different standards for how they behave professionally, and they're having to make assumptions like, is this police department operating at a high level or a low level? All this, you know, periphery organization on this event, is it solid or not? Like, and there's weirdos. I mean, if you look at the Pentagon, I think they kill 4 or 5, you know, crazy people that just roll up to the parking lot of the Pentagon every year.
They just killed someone at the RNC, right? I mean, yeah. It's not like, right? So that was DHS that did that, and the guy clearly was a lunatic. Now, listen, that's Earl Plumlee, Medal of Honor recipient, Green Beret, but and that's only the information that's out there. We're not extrapolating, making, you know, decisions. We're just saying, look, this is his opinion, my opinion, and, you know, I put a lot of stock in someone who's got as many tours and combat valor awards that, you know, like Earl Plumlee does. So now I want to take it a step. Obviously you want to mitigate the threat, then you want to neutralize it if you have to, but let's talk after the shot is taken. You know, God forbid, you know, it's a lunatic that takes a shot at the president, but we also have, you know, adversaries and some really, you know, guys who spent some time at a range. And, you know, God forbid if a 50 caliber is employed or there's a second shooter, a bunch of people standing in a circle with their hands like over the president's, you know, hair, the longer you present that, depending on the ballistic and the elevation and the distance, that could have been actually worse than the original shot.
Yeah, if he had I don't know. I think he must have just got excited, because that clump out there on the stage, if he had been able to calm his nerves and effectively engage that, he probably still would have killed the president, at least that group of Secret Service officers. That rifle that he was using, you know, one person is not going to stop that projectile. It's going to go right through him. They probably should have moved him off the stage a little quicker. Also, he's not the most compliant. He's known to kind of do whatever he wants. And he got shot and he was angry. So he decided he was going to hold center stage a little bit more.
It just can't happen. It can't happen. And no. he can't stand on that rung on the beast either. He can't wave to the crowd as he's supposed to go in the car. I mean, that's troubling.
Yeah, it is. In the era of having politicians, be out there, that's, that, you know, John F. Kennedy took that to his grave. They just can't interact with the public how they used to. The best case scenario is you have, you know, mentally addled people out there that make it their mission to kill high profile people. And just being around a crowd, you're putting yourself at a crazy risk.
You earned the Medal of Honor, taken out of Baker's Dozen of bad guys. But one of the things that's odd about your situation was that, you know, it wasn't just a target, an enemy that was, you know, firing a rifle, traditionally a machine gun. This was basically everyone was a mortar because they had the suicide vest. So you have to take a target out, but then they could detonate or you could detonate them by engaging them. This is, you know, the stress of 20 years of the global war on terror. And it kind of, your story is the apex of how difficult it is to safeguard yourself from that. When you look at the threat of like drones and, you know, grenades and mortar rounds and artillery, we're only focused on potential assassination attempts with rifles or handguns, but we really haven't gotten into the new age of, you know, putting a bunch of drones in the sky and raining them down on a podium.
Yeah, and it's only a matter of time before we see it. It's a tool that you'd be a fool not to use because, as you've seen, if you get within small arms range of a high value target like the president, there's also that puts you in small arms range of highly trained individuals who are just as dedicated as you are. And a drone really is the easy way out. It lets you not risk yourself to, you know, immediate lethal force. And it's a complex job. I'm glad I don't have to figure that one out.
That's Earl Plumlee, and he's really smart, and he's a Medal of Honor recipient, and he's a Green Beret. And you're going to be hearing a lot more of him. I'm probably going to ask him to come back and give this exact same conversation with my audience Monday through Friday, because it's awesome information. I haven't really heard it anywhere else. But the other thing, too, is that it's not – there's some things that we're being unfair to the Secret Service with, and there's some things I don't think we're being probably too kind to the Secret Service. And that's the problem with AARs. Even at your level, Earl, an after actions review wasn't supposed to be a "you're so awesome." It was supposed to be a hot wash. Like, let's get to all the flaws and perfect them.
Yeah, I'm much more interested in the things that went wrong than things that went right. I like to cover the things that went right. You know, let's repeat those. But you have to have that humility to admit, like, hey, I was trying to do this and it didn't quite work out for me, and then take that constructive criticism, and that's what training's for. If your training is all wins, you're probably not training that well.
And I bet you, you would also say the same thing about your action that, you know, received the Medal of Honor. It's there's probably a lot of things you would not do the same way, and you obviously were successful in saving lives and taking out bad guys. But even in those circumstances, there's things to improve. And if you're if you really want to be the best and you are a dominant organization, you're going to want to be better. Earl Plumlee, thank you for your time. Medal of Honor recipient, Green Beret. God bless. And we'll hear more from Earl. Are you down for that?
I would love it.
All right.
Good. Always fun. Intriguing conversation.
Intriguing is always. No, I learned a lot, though, and I always do. Earl Plumlee, thank you for your time.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you.
That is Pistol Plumlee. That's what I call him. At any rate, we wrap this up. We filled in for Joe Beamer. He'll be back next week. Hardline. Thank you to Professor Iacobucci from Buffalo State. Thank you to Jack O'Donnell from O'Donnell Associates. Dr. Mark Epstein giving his side of the ledger. And, of course, Earl Plumlee talking about the assassination attempt on Trump. I mean, there's some positives the Secret Service deserves credit for. We're going to learn more about it. But, man, the things that they messed up, you're super lucky. Super lucky that the emergency crew filled in when those shots rang out, because if that kid had more ammunition, we know that could have been a rough day, and it should have been probably. We're going to be live and local Monday through Friday, the Bellavia program. You can check that out, 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Then Tom Bowerly's after me, and then Tom Puckett. That's our weekly broadcasting. That's what we offer here. Download that Odyssey app. Thank you to Zach PenQ. Thank you to Lisa Palizzi for producing this. And download the Odyssey app. Follow us on X and Facebook. We'll see you Monday morning.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.